Welcome back, everyone. We're really diving deep today into the world of UK wargaming.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, specifically chapter 2 of their handbook.
Okay.
And you know, think of it this way. You're maybe interested in using wargaming to solve problems,
mm-hmm.
not just for military strategy, but for all sorts of complex situations.
Right.
This chapter's kind of like your cheat sheet.
Hmm.
You know, to understanding the core process.
Yeah.
And all the variations that are out there so you can pick the right approach.
Yeah, and what I think is so interesting about the UK's approach is they really put a lot of emphasis on having like clear shared terminology.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, they really want to make sure that everybody is speaking the same language when it comes to wargaming, which can get really complex.
Yeah, so let's talk visuals.
Okay.
You know, remember those classic war room maps?
Oh, yeah.
With the different colored pins?
Right.
Well, those have evolved, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. Yeah. So the handbook still uses the kind of familiar blue for friendly forces.
Yep.
And red for opposing forces, but they've also added orange for non-state actors.
I see.
And then black for transnational criminal organizations.
Black for criminal organizations. Wow.
Yeah.
That's it. That's a new one. That's really interesting.
It is.
It really shows, you know, how wargaming has really expanded
yeah.
beyond just traditional nation state conflicts.
Mm.
It's about tackling those messy realities of the globalized world we live in.
It really is. And the handbook is very, very careful to distinguish wargaming from just planning.
Yeah.
It's not enough just to create a plan.
Yeah.
You have to see how it plays out. You have to let decisions actually have an impact on the situation.
Yeah.
That's how you generate those unexpected insights
yeah.
and catch potential pitfalls.
So it's not really about predicting the future. It's about exploring different possibilities.
Yeah, exploring mm-hmm. possibilities and learning from those possibilities.
Yeah.
And the handbook gives a great historical example with the 1904 Battle of Port Arthur. A war game that was conducted before the battle actually predicted a plausible outcome.
Interesting.
That was completely missed by the leadership at the time.
So they were using this even back then
yeah.
to kind of explore different scenarios. But that really raises a crucial question, right?
Mm.
What good is a brilliant war game?
Right.
If decision makers just don't buy into the process.
Absolutely.
If they ignore the findings.
That's such an important point.
Yeah.
You need buy-in from the start.
Right.
You need decision makers who are open to challenging their assumptions.
Yeah.
Even if it means facing some uncomfortable truths.
Right.
And I think the Port Arthur example really shows us that mm-hmm. wargaming is as much about influencing human behavior
yeah.
as it is about simulating events.
It's like holding up a mirror to your own assumptions.
Exactly.
Which can be pretty unsettling.
Yes.
But that's where the real value lies.
Absolutely.
In exposing those blind spots and forcing you to think differently.
Precisely. And speaking of thinking differently,
okay.
the handbook kind of throws a curveball in here with talking about wargaming variations.
Okay.
And they use this great example of the Falklands War of 1982.
Okay. Now, you would think they would use a war game from before the conflict to kind of, you know,
exactly.
See what went right, what went wrong.
You would think so.
But this was retrospective, wasn't it?
It was. It was conducted decades after the actual event.
Decades after.
Yeah, and here's the kicker. They brought in the actual commanders from the Falklands War to participate.
Really?
Talk about facing your past decisions head on.
Wow.
That must have been intense.
That's incredible.
But it really shows how adaptable wargaming can be.
Yeah.
It's not just about predicting the future or even understanding the past.
Right.
It's about using those insights to inform future decisions.
Yeah, it's all about learning.
Exactly. And the Falklands War Game also highlights another really interesting aspect, and that's adjudication rules. So they used a very rigid set of rules to determine how actions in the war game would actually be resolved.
Mm-hmm.
But they also allowed for some flexibility when the situation really demanded it.
So you're not just blindly following the rules. It's about understanding when to bend them.
Exactly.
Based on the unique circumstances of
yeah.
the game.
And they didn't just simulate military actions either. They
yeah.
also factored in, you know, the perceptions and reactions of the international community.
Wow.
Domestic populations, other factions.
So it's about understanding the bigger picture.
Yeah.
How all these different elements interact.
It really is.
And influence the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. And this Falklands war game was completely manual.
It was no fancy computers, no software. It
right.
was really about bringing those key players together.
Yeah.
Getting them to think through those past decisions and extracting valuable lessons learned.
That's a powerful reminder that sometimes the most effective tools are the simplest ones.
I think so too. Yeah, it really speaks to the power of human interaction and collaboration, even in a simulated environment. But, you know, the handbook doesn't just focus on these complex retrospective war games, like the Falklands example. It also highlights the value of simpler, more accessible approaches.
That's a good point. Not everyone has the time or resources to organize a massive multi-day war game.
And so chapter two talks about the 1914 Kriegsspiel, a historical war game that examined the opening moves of World War I. And what's so fascinating about this one is that they developed a simplified version that can be played in just 90 minutes.
A 90-minute war game. Wow, that's amazing. It really opens up the possibilities
It does.
for using wargaming in all different kinds of contexts.
Absolutely. And they've been using the shorter version to introduce wargaming to wider audiences, really demonstrating that it's not just this tool for elite institutions or military strategists.
It's about democratizing knowledge, making these strategic tools available to anyone who wants to tackle complex problems, whether it's in business, government, even personal life.
I like that democratizing knowledge
Yeah.
because at its core, that's what wargaming is all about, empowering people to think critically, challenge assumptions, explore different perspectives.
So let's say you're inspired by all this and you want to design your own war game. Where do you start?
Well, chapter two provides a really helpful framework. And it all begins with defining the problem or question you really want to explore. It sounds obvious, but it's so crucial to be crystal clear about your objectives from the get-go.
What are you hoping to achieve with this war game?
Exactly. Are you trying to predict future trends, test out different strategies, or gain a deeper understanding of a complex issue?
It's like setting the stage, right? Defining the parameters of your exploration.
And once you have a clear objective, you need to define the scope of your war game. So what time period are you looking at? What geographical area? What specific actors and factions will be involved?
You're drawing boundaries, you're making sure your simulation is manageable and focused. You can't model the entire world, at least not all at once.
And you also need to be realistic about your resources.
Of course.
How much time do you have? How many people can you involve? What kind of materials and tools are available?
Yeah, these are all practical considerations that can really shape the design of your war game.
And once you've defined your objective and scope, you need to choose the right type of war game. And remember, there's a whole spectrum of approaches out there, from highly structured and deterministic to more free-flowing and unpredictable.
So how do you choose the right approach? What are the key factors to consider?
Well, it really depends on your objectives and the nature of the problem you're exploring. If you're trying to model a very specific scenario with a high degree of accuracy, you might opt for a more rigid, rule-based approach. But if you're looking for broader exploration and creative brainstorming, a more flexible and open-ended game might be more suitable.
It's about matching the tool to the task.
And then there are the game mechanics. This is where you really determine how players will interact, how decisions will be made, how actions will be resolved, how outcomes will be evaluated.
So it's like setting the rules of engagement for the game.
And it's crucial to strike a balance between realism and playability.
Right.
Too much realism, and the game becomes bogged down in complexity.
Right.
Too much simplification, and it loses its ability to generate meaningful insights.
You got to find that sweet spot where the game is engaging and challenging, but still grounded in reality.
And speaking of engagement, don't forget about the players.
The players, right?
They're the ones who bring your war game to life with their decisions, actions, and interactions. And chapter two really emphasizes the importance of selecting players who represent a diversity of perspectives and expertise.
That mix of viewpoints is essential, you know, for sparking debate. Challenging assumptions, generating creative solutions, that's what makes wargaming so dynamic and insightful.
And you want to make sure that your players understand the objectives of the game,
Right.
the rules of engagement, and their roles and responsibilities. It's also helpful to provide them with some background information and context about the scenario they'll be playing.
Give them the backstory, the context that allows them to really step into those roles and immerse themselves in the game.
And as the game unfolds, you want to pay close attention to how the players are interacting, the decisions they're making, and their reactions to unexpected events.
It's like observing a fascinating experiment in action.
It really is.
You're looking for patterns, anomalies, and those aha moments that reveal something new about the system you're studying.
And don't forget to take notes.
Take notes, okay.
Documenting player actions, decisions, and the rationale behind those decisions will be crucial when it comes to analyzing the results of your war game.
It's like gathering data from your experiment, the raw material you'll use to draw conclusions and extract insights.
Right. Chapter 2 provides a really helpful framework for analyzing those results.
Yeah.
Starting with identifying key takeaways and insights, what worked, what didn't, what surprised you.
You're separating the signal from the noise.
Yeah.
Extracting the nuggets of wisdom that can inform future decisions.
Exactly. And it's also important to acknowledge the limitations of the war game.
Right.
Every simulation has its boundaries. And it's crucial to be transparent about those limitations when interpreting the results.
So you're acknowledging that the war game is a simplified representation of reality.
Yes.
Not a perfect predictor of the future.
Right. And finally, you'll want to communicate your findings to relevant stakeholders.
Okay.
Whether it's decision makers, policymakers, or other interested parties.
It's about sharing those insights.
Yeah.
Making sure they reach the people who can actually use them to make a difference.
Chapter 2 offers some helpful tips on presenting your findings in a clear, concise, and compelling way. Using data visualization storytelling and interactive presentations to engage your audience and make your point stick.
Make those insights memorable and actionable.
Exactly. And beyond its strategic applications, Chapter 2 also highlights some of the broader benefits of wargaming.
Okay.
Particularly in the areas of training and education.
It's about more than just making decisions.
Yeah.
It's about developing skills and expanding your thinking.
Absolutely. Wargaming provides this hands-on experiential learning environment.
Yeah.
Where individuals can develop their critical thinking skills, their decision-making abilities, and their ability to work collaboratively in a team setting.
It's a fantastic way to foster innovation and creativity by simulating different scenarios and exploring alternative possibilities.
Yeah, it encourages you to think outside the box. Break free from conventional thinking and come up with new ideas.
And let's not forget the social and collaborative aspects of wargaming.
Absolutely.
Right.
It brings people together from diverse backgrounds and disciplines, fostering communication, understanding, and a shared sense of purpose.
It's about building relationships, breaking down silos, and creating a more collaborative and innovative culture.
Exactly.
So Chapter 2, it covers a lot of ground.
It does. It really does.
From the history and fundamentals of wargaming
mm-hmm.
to practical advice on designing and running your own games.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just theoretical, is it?
No, not at all. The handbook really emphasizes that wargaming is an evolving field.
Right.
It's constantly adapting to new challenges and new opportunities.
Yeah. And they actually encourage readers to, you know, engage with the concept, adapt them to their own needs, and contribute to that ongoing evolution.
Exactly. It's not about being passive. It's about being an active participant in shaping the future of wargaming.
They even suggest using the handbook itself as a wargame.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
It's pretty meta.
It is, but it's also a brilliant way to approach professional development, right?
Mm.
It's not about just passively absorbing information.
Right.
It's about actively wrestling with ideas, applying them to real-world scenarios, and ultimately becoming a more strategic thinker.
So Chapter 2 is like a great jumping-off point for anybody who's interested in UK wargaming, but it sounds like the real journey begins when you close the book and start putting those ideas into practice.
Absolutely. That's where the true learning happens. It's about moving beyond the theoretical and embracing that messy, iterative, and often unpredictable nature of real-world problem-solving.
Well, I think we've given our listener a really solid overview of Chapter 2.
I think so, too.
Hopefully it sparked some ideas and maybe even inspired them to try out wargaming for themselves.
I hope so. Remember this deep dive, this handbook. It's just the beginning. The real challenge is taking these insights, these tools, and using them to navigate the complexities of our ever-changing world.
So to our listener, we encourage you to explore the full UK Wargaming Handbook and let us know what you find most intriguing. We're always excited to hear how people are using wargaming to tackle complex problems and generate those aha moments.
Yes, absolutely.
Until next time, happy wargaming.